When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Merit Lage.
It's Merit Lodge.
Next on Eternal Dirtles.
But now I'm keeping up with the Joneses.
Hey, I just want to give a quick shout out to all of our Patreon supporters out there. Thank you to the Dirtle Maniacs. If you want to be a Dirtle Maniac, go to patreon.com/eternaldirtles and help support the channel. It keeps things going. It keeps things updated. Thanks so much for watching. On with the show.
Hello and welcome to Eternal Dirtles. I'm your host, Zach Clark, and with me this week, because Phil is out for a month and a half on a wrestling musical, we have the hosts of the Dark Depth podcast, Michael Mapson and Billy Mitchell. Mike, Billy, how's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm super psyched to have you guys here. It's long overdue, I think. We've been podcasting in lanes right next to each other for so long. I feel like it's time to have you guys on the cast. It's well past time, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's like this big, I don't want to say boom, but like there was a number of, I'll say there was very minimal legacy podcast, anything like Eternal podcast in general. And then suddenly, like within like a 3 month window, there's like six. Some of them have gone away, but you know, we're still here. You're still here. So yeah,
it's all about good branding, right? When I started, it was we were a control style legacy and vintage podcast. And that's obviously not how we roll anymore. But you guys have good branding. You're all about Dark Depths. There was a point in time where every legacy podcast was Eternal something. You're down to just two now.
Yes, which I think is good. I actually like the idea of saying, oh, we're Eternal in the name. Dark Depths does the same thing, though, with being like a Dark Depths. Oh, what's illegal in? Only Legacy.
Yep.
Like, okay,
yep.
Well. But I mean, we had some other alternatives. I don't know, Mapson, if you remember too many of them. I know we had like Titan Talk with one of them, but that obviously got taken as well.
I honestly, if we could go back in time, I would name it something else because I feel pigeonholed. I don't know. Well, like, not necessarily, because like we do talk about other stuff, but it's like, I think if you have never listened, it's like, hey, I want to pick up Dark Depths, I will play this.
That's exactly what I wanted to get at. Actually, is so. Are you both Dark Depths, like, you know, like Turbo Depths players, or like where does that come from? And are you still that? Because like I don't dirtle. I tempo. I occasionally combo, but I'm almost never dirtling. Phil is dirtling. I'm never dirtling.
Yeah, I mean, Mapson, you're definitely the quote unquote lands guy, I guess, out of the two of us. But you've even really broken that mold in the past, I'll say, like 2-3 years. I mean, we've been doing the show for like 4 years now. So, you know, I don't think I've ever really been a lands guy. I've been much more of like the tempo style or combo. A lot of Delver in Legacy, a lot of like Abzan Company when that was legal in Modern. I like those decks that give you like a billion triggers that you have to resolve, and you're going to time out on Moto because there's too many triggers. That's my style of deck. Mapson definitely gears more towards the land, though.
Yeah, so I would say that is a common misconception that I do not stop. So I play a lot of lands-based strategies, but it's not even necessarily that like I love lands-based strategies. I just like cheating on mana. And so like I like that the lands kind of do more than just produce mana. Like, I don't know. It's like they kind of generate extra resources. So I end up playing a lot of land-based strategies, but it's less like, hey, I want to play with lands, and more like, this feels like cheating when I'm doing this. Like, when my land is also a game ending threat, like, it just feels like I have cheated the resource system.
So for me, I just assume that your villain arc started when somebody Force of Willed a card that you wanted to put into play, and you were like, I'm just going to stop that from happening ever again.
Never again.
You know, I do hate when my stuff gets forced, so...
That's a whole legacy player vibe. I was at the I think you guys were both there too at the SCG Philly event.
Yeah.
And I remember, and I was 0-2, so I was already not doing well. And I sat down, you know, I'm a Boomer Magic player. I've been playing for 29 years, right? And I sat down across from another guy, like one seat over from me, who started his match out by asking his opponent, "You're not one of them Force of Will decks, are you? Man, I hate Force of Will." I was like, if this is a way to like troll your opponent, this is the funniest way to do it. Just like, are you playing like the most ubiquitous card in this format? It's like almost a level like he's like a hipster, you know, like he's like got a whole like. I was like, that is an amazing take. You're just like, yeah, I hate Force of Will, so I'll play the format that it's guaranteed to show up against me several times in one tournament.
This episode is brought to you by Tales of Adventure. Go to toamagic.com and use the code DIRTLES for 5% off your order. You'll be directly supporting the show, and you'll get the entire order in one package. No more waiting for several packages. That's toamagic.com, code DIRTLES for 5% off.
Yeah, that's start doing that to people.
I mean, I would too, I guess. Like, that means, like just like showing up like, oh, fetch lands? Okay. Like, what a weird dark place to start.
I only play like, unsleeved and without a playmat. Like,
yeah.
Come on.
I don't know. People like what they like. It makes no sense to me. It's like, it reminds me of like there was a time I was hanging out with my friends and like we showed up with Legacy decks and like we went to a store, but like with the intention of playing each other. And somebody showed up and they're like, "Oh, like, can I play?" It's like, "Sure, but we're playing Legacy." And then they like yelled at us for not having casual stuff. And it's like, you came to our thing. Yeah. You need to do what we're doing.
Yeah. If you want to throw down with Legacy decks, you got to be playing Legacy decks as well.
Yeah.
So from that, then, so we've got an idea of style of play, but let's talk about let's delve into to depths really fast, because there's a couple of questions I have as a non depths player, a person who always gets confused when I see a dark depths. I have no idea what I'm up against. I just assume like I have like heuristics in my head that are like this is always the same, and the decks are so vastly different from each other. So what's the difference between like a lands deck and like a turbo lands deck, or like the turbo depths deck, and what falls in between there? If you guys can help me out with that, because I think that's a question a lot of people that aren't super familiar with that matchup, because they don't. It's not like one of the top five decks in meta. You know what you're seeing against Scaminator or let's say a Delver deck. You know, you can kind of test those flavors out a little bit and understand the nuances there. But something like a Depths deck, there's a lot of different angles of play, and I think that that's one of those things that I'm always confused about.
Yeah. So I want to push back on the narrative. It's not a top five deck. This is going to sound like I'm biased. I generally think that Depths is like one of the best position decks in the format right now.
I'm not going to say it's a bad deck. What I'm saying is it's not the top five most played decks in the format.
Yeah. Okay. I agree.
Yeah. You don't end up playing that deck like every time you go into a daily or whenever you go to your local. Like there's that one guy maybe, but like not often do you see that deck across the table from you.
That's fair. And I'm definitely that guy. And you know, it makes sense because you have like unique cards. Like Mox Diamond is not played in a lot of things, but is like absurdly expensive.
Yeah.
There's some pretty like big differences between the decks, but there's also a lot of overlap. And it's funny because they do bleed together a lot. And I'm very much like somebody's like, "Oh, you're playing lands." I'm like, "I'm not playing lands. I'm playing depths." So like I would say like a big difference is when you see traditional like lands, which is like, you know, the slower prison control-ish style, you have like exploration and you have like Life from the Loams, and that deck is much better at playing this grindy style game where they can go long. And don't get me wrong, they can still just go, "Oh, it's turn two, here's a Merit Lage, can you beat it?" But they can also just go like, "Oh, you know, I'm just going to kill you with 30 punishing fires or whatever." Mm-hmm. Versus on the other end of the spectrum, you have green-black turbo depths, which is just trying to go as fast as possible, playing Lotus Petals, and things like Sylvan Scrying to just and Vampire Hexmage to kind of guarantee that you're getting a fast merit mage. An average hand for that deck looks like turn one, Urborg, Thoughtseize you. See the closest clear. Turn two, Vampire Hexmage off of Dark Depths and Urborg. Make it 20/20, you're dead. But over time, the deck has evolved. Like my personal favorite is Green-White Lands, which is kind of in the middle. It's still more focused on the depth strategy. But you have the ability to go much longer. You have backup plans in Elvish Reclaimer. And
you got like that's a Green Sun Zenith style deck as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you win a lot of games from just attacking with Knight of the Reliquary. And I would say a lot of my wins, I mean, yes, it's the strength of the deck, but also just people not understanding how to play against it and being like, I have to wait for the combo. I have to be prepared to deal with the combo. I have to be prepared for the combo. And I'm just like, I'll attack you for eight.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have that deck. You have people who have been playing the Abzan variants lately with Orcish Bowmasters. And there's so much you can do. You can play like the Rainbow Depths builds, which again are on the turbo side, but you don't play Forest or Swamp, but you play like Gemstone Mine and Mana Confluence. So you can play anything. So you'll get got by Stifle in that deck, which is great because it stops a Wasteland, but also sometimes it just mana screws you out of the game. And now you get to play the Lumbering Megasloth if you want to do that. Mm-hmm. So you can go turn one Dark Depths, turn two Yavimaya. Let's put this 8/8 in play. Can you deal with it? Oh, you can? Okay. Here's a Thespian Sage. I made a 20/20. Shame you blew your Swords to Plowshares, nerd. So there's just there's a lot of variety you can do. But at the end of the day, I would say lands is really the slower. I can go super long, and Depths is more focused on I'm making a 20/20 and I may or may not have a backup plan.
So let's break down the two decks into what is the thing that when you see this card, you're like, oh, this is lands. When you see this card, this is Turbo Depths.
Exploration equals lands. Life from the Loam generally equals lands, although some Depths players have started adapting it. Vampire Hexmage, you're looking at Depths. Specifically Turbo, if you're seeing Green Sun Zenith and or Knight of the Reliquary, you're looking at like Green-White Depths. And then everything else is kind of like an offshoot of one of those.
All right. Yeah, like Fear of Resistance, I think, is another one that has been popping up in like the lands deck a little more often. Same thing with Ancient Tomb. Those don't normally show up in the Depths decks. But, I mean, like I think they'd be decent additions, but usually not there. Nope. You don't think they'd be good?
No, they would be very bad.
What if you were playing a card that was like a green and too generic, like maybe like a Tireless Tracker, or maybe that new card from Thunder Junction could do that.
I used to play Tireless Tracker.
It could be good there. I don't know, but like there are definitely some other like kind of like not niche cards, but like there are some cards in the Depths deck that like don't really have a purpose, like. That like in a land strategy, the one I keep thinking, I'm trying to think of what a card is. Sylvan Library is like one of those ones that like it can show up in both decks, but like if I see that, I'm automatically going towards Depths, not lands, at least in the main deck.
Eternal Dirtles is proud to be sponsored by Moxfield. Moxfield is the best Magic the Gathering deck building website on the internet. You can create, share, and find decks from Commander to Legacy, and even fan-supported formats like Pre-Modern and Old School. You can see all of our decks on our Moxfield. Follow the links below to stay tuned. Now, here's where we go from here, is when there's vastly different ways to attack these decks, right? So when you're playing either one of these decks, what's the card that you're like, please don't sideboard this in against me? And don't say Blood Moon. We all know Blood Moon gets you, right?
Not really.
No, Blood Moon doesn't get you. I'm glad I asked.
This is going to sound crazy. Like the mono red prison decks are like actually among at least green white depths best matchups. They're a little bit rougher for green, black, turbo. But even traditional lands, I would rather be on the land side of that. Because of the change they made, it's funny, I want to call it the new rules change, but it's like 8 years old or whatever, where Dark Depths comes in with zero counters under a Blood Moon or Magus. It's very easy to just play it and then kill the Magus.
And then you get a 20-20.
Yeah, through like Force of Vigor, Punishing Fire, whatever. And I've had a lot of games where my opponent's like, turn one Moon, can you beat it? And I'm just like, turn one Dark Depths, Force of Vigor, you're dead.
Yeah, thanks for the help.
Cards I hate seeing. Brazen Borrower makes me really angry.
Okay.
Yes.
Because everyone can play it. It's a catch-all. Like, everyone has a couple of those in their sideboard.
Yeah, and the worst thing is, like, when I was on green-black, I would play Duress, like, three Duress in my main deck, and I would Duress them, and you can't take it.
Yeah.
And I would just, like, be so mad. Shieldred's Edict is probably the best card.
Yeah, Shieldred's Edict, what a spit in the eye to Depths players.
Yeah. Lost one this morning.
Yeah, that's one of those cards where you could tell, like, whoever, someone hurt them with a 20-20 at some point in their life. You know, you could tell someone was just like, you know what, I'm just sick of losing. Now they're bringing in 1/1s or, like, fetching to get their Dryad Arbor. I'm sick of it. We're not having that anymore. And they were just like, we're going to print this card.
Yeah. For lands in particular, I would say Price of Progress is really scary. Because it's a huge, huge punish. For Depths, I would say one of the worst things I can see, specifically for green-white, but also green-black, is Terminus. Because at least with, like, swords, you can protect your Merit Lage, whether it's, like, through Sylvan Safekeeper or Not of This World or whatever. But when it's Terminus, it's like, okay, well, it kills my indestructible creature, and I can't even play, like, a protection spell. So Terminus is backbreaking. And, you know, I'm sure that the listeners of the show are already fans of that card with Phil being.
Yeah, Phil, here, so. I mean, Phil's cast more Terminus than any other human being alive, I think, at this point.
Probably. I do want to add Unlicensed Hearth to it, especially versus lands. I think it's a really good answer, just because it comes down early. It's hard to remove. As long as you don't activate it, you can very easily just eat the Punishing Fires, eat the Life from the Loans, eat the lands. Put them in a position where it's hard for them to actually operate their game plan. So that's another one.
And keeping Knight low as well, assuming that Knight played in that version.
Yes.
Either way, it's bad for Knight.
Rest in Peace and Leyline are also huge. Very similar things. But it's one of those things where, like, you know, you do have to be careful, because if you bring it in against green-black Depths, like, those are cards that are not affecting that, but they're slam dunks against, like, lands or green-white Depths.
Yeah, they're relying on the graveyard. Do you find that in the current meta, where Rescaminator is, like, the deck to beat, that those cards are showing up more often?
Not really, and I feel like they should be. I've been seeing more ley lines in sideboards, but I haven't played against that many. I don't know if people are just not bringing them in. If
I wouldn't think to bring in, like, that level of graveyard hate against a lands deck, I'd be trying to, like, figure out ways to stop the 20-20 from happening with, like, Swords to Plowshares and stuff like that.
It's really good, because, like, in traditional lands, it shuts off your engine, your loam engine, right? Yeah. And in first green-white Depths, if my Elvish Reclaimers are 1/2s and my Knight of the Reliquaries are 2/2, like, I don't want to spend 3 mana for a 2/2. It just, it doesn't do anything.
I know how bad that is as a former Rug Delver with Tarmogoyf and Nimble Mongooses player. Mm. I used to side in, because people were playing Rest in Peace and, like, Energy Field, I used to side in Helm of Obedience. To be like, ha ha, I got you.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think having the graveyard deck, and, like, obviously, like, I think a lot of decks in Legacy right now are using the graveyard to some extent. Obviously, there's some exceptions, like your, goblins and initiative and things like that. But a lot of them have some, like, light graveyard synergies. This Rescaminator deck, I think, is so good, though, because in game one, it's a heavily graveyard focused deck. We're trying to entomb, we're trying to get a track. The game two, they just sideboard into, like, this creature beatdown, you know, just scam package, I guess. I mean, like, they obviously still keep the reanimates, but they're cutting some number of the animate deads. So, like, going on, you know, mulliganing to 5 cards to find your ley line of the void is, like, not necessarily even a winning or good strategy in that.
Yeah, it's something I've learned. I got to play in a local. Where I played against Rescaminator 3 times in a row, and I won, I drew, and I lost against it. And as I was playing, I realized that, like, talking to my opponents after each game is that a lot of times they were siding out a lot of their reanimate package to bring in just other stuff so that, like, you just draw, like, three or four dead cards against them. Or, you know, like, even two or three dead cards is enough to, like, swing the game into any deck's favor. You know, if you're just drawing dead a couple of times, you can get there. And what would normally be maybe a less impactful overall deck by not playing the reanimate cards, right? Obviously, a 7/7 with lifelink and vigilance and draw 10 cards is wonderful. But if you're able to have your opponent only focus on that and switch over to a totally different package that they're not ready for, yeah, there's so much that they can do. And there's just the edge that they gain from you not drawing cards that you actually need against them.
It's like virtual card advantage. I mean, that's one of those concepts we don't get to see very often, because I think that's probably one of the best pivot plans I think I've seen.
The transformational sideboard, yeah.
Yeah, it's just really hard to actually attack properly. And again, if you're guessing, right? Like, you are assuming they're cutting some number of cards to put in these more proactive cards, like Doth the Voidwalkers and whatnot. If you're wrong, you're in real big trouble. And they still do have some number of, you know, reanimates and entombs in the deck. So, like, there's a good chance that, like, even if you know, play it smart and, you know, board in the extra unholy heat or whatnot, they're just going to go, oh, turn one entomb, turn two attraction. Are we done here? Can we go home?
Sometimes they just have it.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your podcast now, because you don't just specialize in Legacy. You guys move through other formats as well. You play a little bit of Pioneer, a little bit of Modern as well.
I try not to play too much Pioneer because it's just like the worst format.
And I'm on the Johnny Magic plan where, like, if I have to play another format, I just find, like, whatever the most uninteractive combo is and play that and, like, hope that I get there.
Yeah, I want to play Treasure Cruise, so I just play Phoenix.
Yeah, that'll do it.
I also tend to play Phoenix. I don't know. It scratches those Legacy vibes, but, like, that format is, like, not it. And I know it has its, like, you know, it's very Stark enjoyers, but, like,
it's a real bummer that the pandemic happened, because there was that year where, like, they were really going to focus on, they had, like, three Grand Prix, you know, there's all this stuff going on. And then they were just like, yeah, I guess it's just going to be Commander from here on out. Like, we're not focusing on any constructed format aside from Commander. Yeah. That could have been a really good year, and it would have given the format the focus I think it needed, where people, you know, where the proper bannings would have happened in time, and we could have seen Pioneer, like, kind of move to Modern's place, and Modern's kind of fallen to the side. I mean, for me at least, Modern's kind of fallen to the side completely. I have the pieces to put together, like, that Zoo deck with a Scion of Draco, but I just realized that, like, it's a better Legacy deck now.
Yeah. The very good Legacy deck.
Yeah, I saw you played it in the challenge this weekend.
Oh man, I had a blast playing in the challenge. I actually, I'm gonna put out a video where I do, like, the Bryant Cook, where, like, you know, I just, like, watch the video. I'm like, here's where I made a mistake, right here. You can see it. Like, this is the thing. Like, I don't love doing gameplay content because I'm not a good game player. Like, I'm not gonna spike the tournament, but getting to stop at certain points and be like, here it is, here's the spot that I screwed up, like, don't make this same mistake, that stuff I like to do. But I'm just getting used to using the online client again, because it's been so long. I didn't have a PC that was, like, useful for a long time, and I was like, all right, I'll just get Parallels, and I'm gonna try and do that. And it's actually pretty easy. So I feel like now it's the time to, like, this was the year I wanted to get serious about being a competitive Magic player again too. Like, I just paid Bryant to coach me for, like, 3 hours 2 weeks ago. It was very worth it. Like, I was always a little skeptical of the coaching programs before, because I just, like, I think spiky, like, 20-year-old Zach Clark had, like, this thing where he's like, nah, there's no one better than me. You know, like, I'm the best. You know, that they just haven't figured it out yet. You know, like, one of these days I'm gonna have my moment. And, like, now I'm 43 years old. I'm like, yeah, I need help. I need all the help I can get. Like, please, someone. Like, also, my back hurts. Like,
yeah.
Like, yeah. Like, I just want any advantage I can get. I'm gonna take. And I think that spending a couple bucks on a coaching session with somebody who's vastly better than you at the game, Even if it just confirms your confirmation bias that, yeah, you play too fast, and also you click too fast, and you just kind of let things slide by you too fast, and you don't mulligan properly. Like, that's enough to be like, okay, these are the things I need to focus on, this is what I need to learn. So that was very useful to me.
I want to come back to the video approach, because there is something I wanted to mention, but I don't want to get too far away from the coaching. I think it's really not a coincidence. It's not a coincidence that a lot of the best players do really well, and they're like, oh, it's like, well, obviously, you know, you're watching, this is obviously a very dated reference at this point, but like on the SCG series, there were those teams, and it's like, well, of course the team that has, you know, Jim Davis and the Jessup twins and, you know, all these people, of course they're doing really good. They have those people. But if you're a good player already and you get to have the opinions, the forethought, the practice games, the review sessions with other good players, like, you're obviously going to do better. Like, that's just like having not even a personal tutor, but just like a personal someone who actually has a vested interest in your success. And like, I think I've had some number of Magic accolades, but like, my play went significantly up in the years after I started playing with Mapson and started playing with other people like locally. You celebrate that, enjoy that win. But you know, like, it's not a coincidence that, you know, I won the Eternal Weekend online after I was playing a long time with Mapson. Mapson ended up making the finals of a GP after he starts playing with other good players in our area. Like, these aren't coincidences. The people that you see in those pods hanging out and drafting after, you know, after events and things like that, they're hanging out and they're getting better. They're making plays. They're talking. They're sharing knowledge. Like, and to be able to get insight from, we'll say, like, you know, a Bryant Cook, a Bosch and Roll. I know. We're just supporting this other podcast, the third legacy podcast at this point.
They'll be on eventually too. Like, Phil's gone. I had to get guests.
For sure. Yeah. But like, I mean, even if you want to, we were actually talking about Doomsday before we started. Like, you know, if I want to find the best event, I'm going to play Doomsday, I'm going to go find Samantha Murphy. She's one of the best Doomsday players that I know. Her insights, her lines, her heuristics, like, even in the episode we had her on, I want to say it was like maybe a year ago at this point. But she said like three things and I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, that makes a lot more sense. I don't know why I didn't think about it like that. You just need that knowledge, and you know, you could find it yourself, but like, why would you spend 10, 20 hours of losing event after event, being frustrated, when you could just have, you know, a Bryant Cook say, oh, by the way, you can't go, like, you can't try to win here. You need to start developing your hand. So let's continue developing your hand. What's our next play? Yeah. Like, that's huge.
To quote a, you guys are from Pennsylvania, to quote a famous Philadelphian, practice.
Yeah. Not a game. Not a game.
Not a game.
Practice.
Talking about practice. We're talking about practice. I think getting in the reps and getting that insight is huge, actually.
Yeah. And there was actually a video, going back to the previous point, there was a video that, like, Reduke did. And I don't know if this was, I don't know if he still does this. I don't watch Reduke videos all the time. But the one video it was, you know, he's like, all right, we'll do the deck check. Breed Duke, and here's John, whatever. And he goes through, and then he's like, sorry about that. I wasn't recording for the first match and a half, so here I am, and we're going to replay these matches. Like, that was my favorite video that he's ever done, and it was completely an accident. But, like, his reflection is being like, okay, so I played this land tapped here, but I, you know, it saves me 2 life, but it doesn't represent Lightning Bolt, so I probably should have kept this untapped. The opponent's gonna untap and play a creature that I probably should have killed, and it's gonna tax the mana for the next turn. We're gonna see that effect play out over the next three
turns. That's the style of content creation for gameplay content I love, actually. Mm-hmm. Because in the now gameplay content, often things go wrong, and you're trying to justify, like, what you're doing in real time. And then if you just, like, take 20 minutes and go back and look at a loss, you learn so much more from looking at a loss than to just, like, move on to the next one. Like, a 5-0, wonderful. A 1-4, you're going to learn a lot more than a 5-0. I guarantee you. Any Magic player who goes 1-4 is going to learn so much more from those losses and is going to be able to, and this is a shame because like no one wants to watch a 1-4 on YouTube, right? But you're going to learn so much more from that player sitting down and watching their 1-4 and being like, here's the spot I screwed up. Here's what I should have been watching out for. This is the play I made here. Like those are the real strategies where you're going to actually learn things, as opposed to a five-oh where just everything comes together for somebody who's like, ha, I did it again. Oh, I mulled to guild pack. I got it again. I didn't even have to mull this time. You know, like you're going to get so much more information from someone who loses and is reflective about those losses than you will from someone who just like wins five games in a row.
Yeah, you're just looking for those opportunities to actually grow. Like, and that's the thing too. Like in for I guess the downside, I guess, of success is like the failure is actually what makes you have to reevaluate your decisions and like, was this actually right? Did this actually make sense in retrospect? Like they were holding up a green for the entire game. Obviously they had Veil Summer. Yeah. Like that makes so much more sense now. Why would they have done all of these things and gone through all these hoops? They didn't have Veil or they didn't have Lightning Bolt. They didn't hold up Counterspell for the whole match. Like, and that's one of those things again, like I might not be able to pick up on that, but it makes a lot more sense when you're watching your opponent start to play for the second time, you can finally see it. And again, that's going back to coaching. That is one of the big benefits of coaching. Having somebody with a good sense of what the format and what a matchup is capable of doing and what you need to look out for. They have that as their main focus, not, you know, the dog bark in the background or the fact that you have to eat dinner soon. Like they're just focusing on the gameplay, which I think is also relevant.
I'm surprised we haven't had my dog bark in the background yet. He loves to do that, like right in the middle of the cast.
Same.
So, pivoting here, because we're coming up on time, but I wanted to ask you guys about Thunder Junction. Have you guys seen anything that looks awesome? Like, pick one or two cards that you think could see play.
Yeah, so we actually just did our like set review episode.
Yeah, I've got mine is in a week with Sahar. So I'm looking forward to that.
I love Sahar.
So I should have been saying when I was looking through it, there actually wasn't a ton that I saw that I think would get play. Like there's a lot of cool, interesting cards, some stuff that's kind of strong.
I have a list of 31 cards.
Okay. You make me look so pessimistic.
Are your 31 cards all legacy focused, or are they like
they're in all different formats? All legacy focused, but not all of them are like this is going to see play. Some of them are like this card's a trap, like, and here's why.
Okay.
You know, so I try and because you know look if you're gonna make a review episode, right? Like you might as well give the whole gamut. But I tend to be a little more optimistic than I probably should. And what I was telling Sahar about this because she's like 31 cards. What are you talking about? I'm a little more optimistic about my card choices because you're more likely to hit when you are a little more optimistic. Like we hit Leisure Shredder, and I don't know what you guys decided on Leisure Shredder, but nobody was talking about Leisure Shredder until like a week after the release, and I was like, I'm pretty sure this is like a Delver, maybe include, and then it went up to like $30, and I was like, yeah, I guess I was right on that one. But that was a card, like, if I just sat there and let Phil, like, because Phil and I will, like, nope each other occasionally, but, like, we've learned to, like, no, just, like, put in, like, make this an hour and a half episode, you know? Mm. Like, let's just go all the way in. People are here for the cards. The internet loves a list.
Okay, so I've got one that we didn't talk about during our set review that I did want to bring up during ours, but we were trying to crunch for time.
Yeah.
The one that I would keep an eye out for that I'm sure is actually on your list too is Tiny Bones the Pickpocket.
Oh yeah, it was one of the first ones. We actually did a episode with just Tiny Bones.
Okay. Yeah, I mean that's the one I think that is definitely a slam dunk. I won't bore your listeners then with it, but I think Ragavan kind of taught us that like legendary one drops are probably pretty good, and one of the issues, if you want to call it an issue, that I was kind of having with, I can't remember actually what the card is called. It's like the Black Menace that has like Descend, Stalactite Stalker.
Oh, yeah.
Like having another high quality one drop, I think would be relevant. And I think potentially having a deck that has Stalker, Tiny Bones, has like DRC, like there's enough there where I think you could have a very clean red black list. And if you start combining, you know, tiny bones with things like, you know, Snuff Out, you can keep your mana requirements a little bit lower, but you can still, you know, I'll kill your Elvish Reclaimer and I'll play that as my two drop on the following turn. Like that's a powerful play. So that's one that I think that would be pretty good.
So two that stuck out to me were Free Strider Lookout, which I don't actually think we'll see much play, but I really like it and I really want it to see play. So it's what's that green card. It's a green card. It's 2 and a green for a 3/3 with reach. And whenever you commit a crime, you look at the top 5 cards of your library. You put a land from among them onto the battlefield tapped, and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So if you've got like a Ramunap Excavator, you can like wasteland lock your opponent while like actually producing mana and like advancing your game plan. And it doesn't necessarily have to be wasteland, right? Like we talked about Maze of Ith or any number of other effects. Again, I really like cheating on mana. And so a card that like ramps is good. It can trade with a Delirious Dragon's Rage Channeler or like a Flip Delver. So I think it's got a fair bit going for it. And then the other card was Giraffe, which is like a blue monastery.
Oh, I love this card. I want to play this in 8-cast so bad. I just want to be like, turn 1, Giraffe, untap, and just like throw a bunch of baubles and like a thought cast and like be like, I have 20 power on the board.
Yeah,
that seems strong.
Yeah. It's also a card I was like, is this a card that can make High Tide viable? Like, as like a side strategy that you can just be like, all right, I'll play this and I'll cast a bunch of spells and like, oh, now I have a board.
I guess that's true. And then there if you take, but like, if you take an extra turn or something like that too, like that's always like the issue, I guess the quote unquote issue with Monastery Mentor, that you need to have like the turn that kills them
stuff.
in addition to the one that makes the army. I think Giraffe is very good at making the army potentially. Like I think, you know, going bauble, ponder into another bauble, right? That's still a 2/2, a 3/3, and a 4/4. Like I'm fine
with that. It's gigantic. That's wild. Like think about, so my biggest issue right now with 8-cast is decks like Goblins just outclass it immediately, right? And they're sensibly the same concept of deck, right? Like you're just you're cheating on mana, putting out something, or like I'm using Urza Saga for other things, but like the idea is like you're cheating on mana to try and get some advantage, right? And Goblins is just doing a much better job of doing the 8-cast plan than 8-cast. But I think that if I remove the size and put in Giraffe, I forget what it's called now, Giraffe.
The Flesh Rite.
The Flesh Rite. Oh, yeah, that's right. Because it's too close to something else. Oh, man. Yeah. I actually typed it into, what is it, Scryfall?
Don't do that.
No, I typed it into Scryfall on my Discord, and it did bring it up. I was like, oh, no. So, with that said, I think that will allow the deck to be in that same class again. Artifact hate and other stuff aside, this also gets around the artifact hate. You know, like you can't melt down my zombies, right? So I think it's an interesting spot for 8-cast to be in. But did you guys have a different spot for it to be in?
As like a finisher in control decks as well. Just, you know, that's a place that we've seen Mentor before. We haven't been seeing a ton of it, but like, you know, it's got some pros and cons in comparison, but a big pro is that you can pitch it to force it well.
Yeah, you can't do that with Fourth Aerolingus.
You cannot. Yeah. So, and I do like the idea that like it is just a zombie too. So like I don't think there's a zombie deck in the format, but yet. I mean this could be it, right? But we also brought up, I think, during the episode, that you could have like something like a Gravecrawler and like Phyrexian Arena and just make infinite zombies.
Phyrexian Altar.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, what kind of psycho stuff are you rolling with here?
No. Like, so whoa. But making infinite zombies is not a bad way to end the game, especially if you like want to combine that with like an Altar for Dementia.
Heck yeah.
That's something you could, you know, potentially do in like in a Modern or something like that. So I don't know if that's something that people would necessarily want to do, but it could be done. And I wouldn't be, I'm 100% someone heard that and was like, oh my gosh, I need my Phyrexian altar. So, you know, try to excite the people.
Awesome. Well, Billy, Mike, Michael, Billy, it's been a pleasure having you guys. I really appreciate you coming on. We got to do this again sometime soon, together or separately. It would be great to have you both on again sometime soon in the future.
Yeah, we'd love to be back. And, you know, maybe we'll return the favor, have you and or Phil on.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, again, everybody, thanks so much for watching. And if you get a chance, comment below. What cards do you think are going to be in the Thunder Junction set that you think we'll see play in Legacy? And with that, have a good one, everybody.
Peace.
For the gift that keeps on giving all year round, join our Patreon at patreon.com/eternaldirtles. And hey, check out this playlist we got up here with all of our interviews over the last couple of years. Some great people from the Legacy community, some really great guests.